You're listening to the Creekside Cast, the official podcast of the Creekside Church. Our mission is helping people discover, trust, and love Jesus Christ. For more information, go to www.thecreeksidechurch.org.
Hey, I'm Scott. Yep, as usual, we're all in recovery again this morning. So the big idea, this I think today is might be my last one, I get to close wheels today, and so, you know, let's talk about that for a second. The focus of the day, kind of the big idea, is mission is why the church exists. And so the thought behind wheels, we kind of didn't really probably, you know, close the gap on that real well. So I'm going to try and hit it one more time for you so you can kind of get it with me. And a lot of that's my fault. But wheels really are the part of the church that's always in contact with the culture. I mean, it's like that's the rubber hits the road. It's the one part of the movement, the vehicle that's always in contact with the road. Okay, so if life is the road, our culture, people are the road, that's the one part of us as a body of believing people that's always in contact. So that's really the concept behind wheels, is that we all have different gifts, abilities, strengths, whatever, but we're all a wheel in some way, shape, or form. We all have some contact with the culture around us, the people we work with, the people that we go to school with, the people that we hang out with, our friends, our neighbors, and on and on. So really, wheels is this part of the church that's always in contact with the culture. Mission is why we exist. That's why we're still here. That's why we do what we do. That's why God has brought us into his circle of living so that we can extend that life out to other people. So that's what we're really thinking about today, and that's kind of what I'm going to be talking about today. If you want to grab a Bible, you can poke your finger into Luke chapter 15 is where we're going to be today. And if you've been in church very long, you've probably heard these three stories, sometimes independently, sometimes all together. But I like to call the title Triple Threat, because Jesus basically lays down three stories, and he's hanging out with a bunch of people. And it says at this time in his journey here, it says, by this time, a lot of men and women of doubtful reputation, or, you know, you could call them disreputable guests, they were hanging around Jesus, listening intently. And the Pharisees and religion scholars were not pleased. They were not at all pleased. They growled. They said, he takes in sinners and eats meals with them, treating them like old friends. And their grumbling triggered this story. And then Jesus launches into three back-to-back stories, the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. Okay, so what is happening here is the scene is this. They're all hanging out, and they're at some kind of a party or something, and people are listening to Jesus talk, because that's what they did in that time. That was entertainment. They went and listened to a rabbi, and this rabbi could rock it. I mean, he had the skills. He was amazing, and he backed it up with miracles. So, like, his crowds were big. People wanted to come and check him out. And not just religious people, but like people from all walks of life and from everywhere wanted to check this guy out and see what he had to say. They were just really fascinated by what he was bringing to the table. And all of a sudden, they have this mixed culture of kind of church type religious culture people and people that are really way kind of outside that. That's not their thing. They're just kind of coming in to check out who this Jesus guy is. And it really sets the spiritual people, the quote spiritual people, on edge. They just get really upset that he's hanging out with all the riffraff and all these sinners are all of a sudden hanging around, you know, kind of, you know, ruining the atmosphere or whatever. I don't know what they were thinking. But so these religious scholars or Pharisees or whatever, they're so upset by this that they start to grumble. They start to get angry. And Jesus kind of, you can tell the tension in the crowd when this kind of stuff begins to happen. You just sense it. And Jesus is so irritated with this. He gets so upset with this kind of behavior that he tells three back-to-back stories to show how people should treat people who are far from God. So Jesus kind of steps out from being rabbi into this spiritual ninjutsu type stuff. I mean, he's about to lay down the triple threat. It's like the bam, 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 right to the, you know, prehistoric solar plex of religious thinking. And he's about to be, you know, open up the ultimate fighter action and go to town on these guys. That's what this is about. So if you, the scriptures kind of say that every word is established by two or three witnesses. Okay, so that's kind of how they would do something. That's how you kind of prove truth to some degree, is that it would be established by witnesses from a reputable source. So Jesus is the most reputable source in the universe, right? And so he backs up this truth with these three stories. He confirms it three times to lay down the importance of what's happening. And he just basically gives them a spiritual kick to the gut, you know, and just says, hey, look, guys, here is what this is about. This is what is really going on here. It's a knockout punch. And it's kind of interesting that Jesus started the church with thoughts like this. So he jumps into this first story, the story of the lost sheep. It says by this, and so continuing on, it says, suppose one of you had 100 sheep and lost one. Wouldn't you leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the lost one until you found it? And when found, you can be sure you would put it across your shoulders, rejoicing. When you got home, you call in your friends and neighbors saying, celebrate with me, I found my lost sheep. Count on it. There's more joy in heaven over one sinner's rescued life than over 99 good people in no need of rescue. So he starts this first story and just kind of, it's like a sheep. Now, to you, me, probably a sheep is no big deal. You know, maybe lamb chops, whatever. Back then, this is livestock. Livestock is what they did. I mean, they traded in actual, you know, stock like this. I mean, there was a price tag on that. That was money to them. That was currency to some degree. I mean, you could change that into cash, but you could also trade and do different things. So this is an important thing that you don't want to lose. If you have 100 sheep and one gets lost, you go after it. And so there's a sense where he's saying, you know, guys, you really should be more, rather than more standoffish towards people, you really should be more of a shepherd. There's kind of a more of a sheep concept here, a caretaker of people concept that's going on here. And interestingly enough, there's certain kinds of people, sheep in particular, don't really want to be lost. They just get lost. It just happens. They wander off. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, me. I just kind of get interested in something and I'm like, oh, look, and I wander off, and pretty soon, you know, I'm trying to figure out where I am. Going after lost people is kind of actually risky business. You never know what you're going to find. Especially when you travel into the wilderness. You know, it's not really a trip to Starbucks. Well, in our culture, maybe it is. But it's really more of a trip deeper into the wilderness. It's a crash course in Man versus Wild. Do you ever see that? Man versus Wild. Oh, I love that show. My son and I watch that. And, you know, we get excited when my wife gags when he eats something that's really nasty. And so it's this dude who goes out into the wilderness, and he's like a former like Navy SEAL or some crazy thing. And he jumps out of helicopters and stuff, and then has to get himself back to civilization with like a knife and some flint and a backpack and stuff. And he eats the most amazing stuff. It's awesome. So he just kind of goes out into the wilderness. And, you know, I'm a redneck from Minnesota. So I grew up, you know, doing all this kind of stuff and shooting arrows and shooting guns and shooting animals. And okay, you can stone me after. So anyway, you know, it's this whole concept of really going into an area that's foreign to you. It's not really your safe zone. But you go out there with a purpose. There's a mission involved with this. And so Jesus is really trying to paint a picture of, hey, look, you know, this is really more than just sitting in the synagogue and chilling and hanging out. It's really about not really here today. Have we ever thought about that? I mean, sometimes we look forward to Sunday and the people that we have around us and the relationships that we have here. And that's really cool. But really, isn't our life about what's out there? And isn't what's really important and what God's really after kind of existing outside the walls of what we have here most of the time? And so Jesus, I think, is really trying to get that thought across. And, you know, the thought of sheep and animals in that day, they're just valuable. And I, you know, if you have a pet, pets are kind of like that, valuable to you. And I think I don't understand the whole pet thing, right? I grew up on the farm. I see these people with these pets and stuff, and you put a dog in a bag, and what is that, you know? I mean, woof, you know, it's a German Shepherd snack. That's what it is. And so, you know, I'm a big dog person. I like big dogs. I like bigger animals. Not a huge cat person. And you know, this goes down like a rat sandwich in Seattle. Because people are not all that excited about, you know, they are really, really into animals and stuff, like in their dogs and stuff. And you ever see those people who treat their pet like a kid? I don't know, whatever. So I'm watching According to Jim the other day on TV, and their pet guinea pig gets sick or something. And like $2,100, right, to fix this guinea pig. Can you believe that? I'm thinking, you know, snap the neck, toss it in the dumpster, right? That's the quick fix, okay? So, and not many people can really do that, right? People can't do that to their own pet. So I'm thinking, and I don't know if this will work in Minnesota, so it's kind of a Seattle thing. I think I could get some opposition for it, but I'm thinking of starting kind of an internet business called Cat Slayers. And so what it would be like is me, and I think that the opening offer would be like 2-for-1 euthanasias, you know, one cat, one dog, or, you know, maybe a guinea pig and a cat, something like that. I'm an equal opportunity killer. And so I'm thinking, you know, it just to help people with their pets, you know, I'd love to save somebody $2,100, and I'd be willing to come in and do that for a small fee. And so, you know, I it's probably not that popular with some, but I think it could work out. And so, you know, anyway, you know, bash it with a shovel, you know, there's lots of different ways I could be, you know, really careful about it and caring and special, and they don't have to watch, but I could provide the video for extra probably. So anyway, there's, you know, there's animals we like, animals we don't like, but sheep in particular in that culture were kind of a big deal. And they were pretty important. And so, you know, I think what Jesus is really saying is, you know, you go after what's important. And, you know, you're going to have to take some risks to go get it. And it does take a certain level of focus and risk and tenacity to go after people. And so then he drops into this second story. It's the story of the lost coin. He says, or imagine a woman who has 10 coins and loses one. And this coin in particular is worth about a day's wages. So I don't know what you make, but a day's worth of what you make. Won't she light a lamp and scour the house, looking in every nook and cranny until she finds it? And when she finds it, you can be sure that she'll call her friends and neighbors, celebrate with me, I found my lost coin. Count on it. This kind of party is what the God's angels throw every time one lost soul turns to God. And all the Christians cheer, yay, hooray, that's what we're about. And, you know, really, the thought behind this thing is, you know, this lady, it's, you know, yeah, we focus on the celebration, right? That this, it was found and now we're excited and happy, but we kind of pass right over all the work that went into finding that lost coin. And really, when we think about it, we kind of have to be a steward of people and recognize and esteem value in the people around us. And, you know, the other thing is sheep, they don't want to be lost, but coins, you know, they're an inanimate object. They don't care if they're lost or not. So you have to work a little bit harder to find a coin. You know, they don't come when you call. And, you know, it's one of those things where money is a big deal. Money is a bigger deal to us than sheep, right? So, you know, when I was a kid, I was a saver. You know, some kids are spenders. My oldest son, Brendan, as soon as that money hits his pocket, man, he's got to find something to spend it on. Almost, you know, whatever, anything. I was the exact opposite. I was a hoarding machine. And so what I did was I found a sock and I would take my money and I would put it in said sock and I would put it up in the top drawer of my dresser and hide it there. And I would hide it so well in the top drawer of my dresser that I would hide it from myself. And so I would go and look for it, but I would look in the wrong sock, and then I would get really upset because it was gone. And it was missing, and after I beat my brother for doing that, taking it, which he didn't, I'd continue to go through tearing apart my dresser. And I've got stuff flying everywhere. My room looks like a bomb went off because I'm desperately trying to find out where I put my cash. And it's like, you know, what, $7 or something like that? Because I'm just a little kid and that's a ton of money to me. But I am freaking out because I want it. You know what? It's silly because I don't even have anything specific to spend it on. I just want to know where it is. You know, I want to know that it's there and that it's safe. And so I'm tearing stuff apart trying to find this money. And this has happened more than once. And you'd think you'd learn the first time, but you don't. And so as soon as you realize, oh, it's not in the dresser, or you think it's not in the dresser, you start traveling around to other parts of the house and looking under your bed and doing all this crazy stuff and getting hysterical until you go through, until, you know, mom, who is wise, says, well, did you check every sock? I think I did. Pretty sure. Check them again. And so finally, sure enough, I missed a sock. There's my cash right there. And I stressed out crazy for nothing. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's like, you know, it's not even so much about quantity here. It's about this importance of something that's, you know, you want. And this lady, she's like, it was probably for her, it was quantity. It was livelihood. I mean, it was this thing that she needed and it was important. And to lose this is unacceptable. So she does a few things. She turns on the lamp, which, you know, I mean, that's, you know, this little light of mine kind of, you know, whatever, you can make the jump there. But if you think about what she did, the process that she took, I mean, she began to turn lights on. She began to scour, the scriptures say. I don't know if you've ever scoured, cleaned anything, like deep cleaning. Like I pick up, but I'm not a deep cleaner. I'm not that good at it, you know. And that's, I get in trouble for this with my wife, right? Because she knows how to clean well. And I'm like it looks pretty clean to me. You know, I wiped that down. Well, did you use like the spray? What spray? I don't know anything about spray. Why do you need spray? The cloth, well, I used a wet washcloth. It's clean. That is not clean. And so I'm like, yes, dear, where's the spray? And it's, you have to realize that scouring is a whole different level of looking. I mean, when she scoured this house, I mean, she's pulling stuff out. You know, when I vacuum, I don't pull stuff out to vacuum behind it. Are you kidding me? I'm busy trying to get this job done so I can turn on the television. That's what's important, right? And so this lady, man, she is like taking everything apart trying to find this thing. She is scouring this hard work of really looking through everything to try and find this. And, you know, she scours the house. She sweeps it. She's looking in every nook and cranny. This is a detailed search to find this. Because the amount is huge. It's a big deal to her. And I think, you know, that's true probably for all of us. Amounts are a big deal. I mean, we all want to make a little more, have a little more. You know, I think about like candy. I love candy. I'm a sucker for, you know, I'm a sweet tooth. It's terrible. And so, you know, you see those little fun size candy bars? That is a misnomer. What is fun about a candy bar that small? You know what's fun? Cramming five of those in your mouth with a glass of milk. That's pretty fun. But like just one of those little things, that's not the fun size. It's too small to really be a snack size is what that is. But this lady, she's like, this is an amount that, you know, is worth something to me. And she's, if I'm going to be, you know, I do not want this coin to be missing. I need this coin. And so she just goes for it. So then he jumps into this last story, the story of the lost son. We've heard it said, the prodigal son. And really this, you know, this firstborn son and the secondborn son. And we've got these two things going on here. And it's interesting because I have two sons and they're both amazing. Last night, actually in conjunction with Wheels, we went to Supercross last night and watched these guys race down at Quest Field from the nosebleed section. It was amazing. I love motocross. I rode when I was a kid. And so I'm looking to get back into that. But, you know, it doesn't work out to have a bike in Seattle. You know, you just have to drive so far to ride. So I'm thinking that, you know, when I'm back in Minnesota, I'm going to try and get a bike and get the boys in, and we'll start, you know, start tearing it up a little bit. So you know, here's the other thing. You know, you got this sheep, probably doesn't want to be lost, wants to be found. Then you got this coin, inanimate object, you know, doesn't care if it's lost or not. But then you have this son, and the son, really, we're going to read the story together in just a second. But you know, some sons don't want to be found at first. And that's the deal with this kid, this younger son. He just doesn't, he's kind of not really interested in being found. It's not that he just, you know, is actually not wanting to be lost, or that he just doesn't care, but he's fully on, you know, just kind of running the other way. It says, then Jesus said, there was once a man who had two sons. The younger said to his father, Father, I want right now what's coming to me. I got to tell you, if my younger son Judah said, Dad, well, I want right now what's coming to me, I'd be like, boy, I'll give you what's coming to you. Now go to your room for the rest of your life before I kill you. I mean, you know, anyway, sorry. So instead of killing the boy, the father divided the property between them. It wasn't long before the younger son packed his bags and left for a distant country. There, undisciplined and disparaged, he wasted everything he had. After he had gone through all his money, there was a bad famine all throughout that country, and he began to hurt. He signed on with a citizen there who assigned him to his fields to slop the pigs. He was so hungry he would have eaten the corn cobs in the pig slop, but no one would give him any. But that brought him to his senses. He said, all those farmhands working for my father sit down to 3 meals a day. Here I am starving to death. I'm going back to my father. I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against God. I've sinned against you. I don't deserve to be called your son. Take me on as a hired hand. And he got right up and went home to his father. And when he was still a long way off, his father saw him. Heart pounding, he ran out and embraced him and kissed him. The son started his speech. Father, I've sinned against God. I've sinned before you. I don't deserve to be called your son ever again. But the father wasn't listening. He was calling to the servants, quick, bring a clean set of clothes and dress him. Put the family ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Then get a grain-fed heifer and roast it. That kind of tosses the whole vegan concept out the window. Anyway, we're going to feast, he says. We're going to have a wonderful time. My son is here, given up for dead and alive again. Given up for lost and now found. And they began to have a wonderful time. All this time, his older son was out in the field. And when the day's work was done, he came in and he approached the house and he heard music and dancing. Calling over one of the houseboys, he asked, what's going on here? He told him, your brother has come home. Your father has ordered a feast, barbecued beef, because he has him home, safe and sound. The older brother stalked off, angry, sulking, and refused to join in. His father came out and tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't listen. The son said, look, how many years have I stayed here serving you, not giving you one moment of grief, but have you ever thrown a party for me and my friends? Then this son of yours, who has thrown away your money on whores, shows up and you go out and throw a feast for him. His father said, son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time and everything that's mine is yours. But this is a wonderful time and we had to celebrate. This brother of yours was dead and he's alive. He's lost and now he's found. So we've got this kid who decides to cash out his inheritance and head for a different country and see the world, enjoy some women, and just do kind of the wild party thing for a while. He's kind of had it with the farm, kind of bored, never was his thing anyway. And so he takes off and he realizes after he's spent it all, that he's in a little bit of trouble and he's got nothing left. And the scripture says that he came to his senses. And coming to your senses is actually a beautiful and horrific thing at the same time. I mean, we've all had those moments probably where we've actually come to our senses about something. And it's this moment where you realize there needs to be change. But at the same time, there's this realization that, oh, wow, I'm really wrong. I'm really way off. I've really, really missed it. I've made a huge mistake. And we all have those moments, and it's what we do with those moments that make us who we are. Those are the moments that really make life great. And you know, like I've come to realize that that I might not have been as cool in the 80s as I thought I was. I'm kind of still working through that. And it's kind of like, what a bummer. But it creates an opportunity for change. And so I still don't have, you know, I don't have hair down to the middle of my back anymore. I don't look like the lead singer of Metallica anymore, which is probably good. You can't picture that, can you? Can you? Yeah, maybe you can. All right. So, you know, it's like, wake up and smell the pig crap because things got to change, right? That's essentially what it happens. And the son realizes, well, you know, all this partying and all this stuff, popularity is overrated. Because it just doesn't last. As long as the money's there, then everything else is cool. But if the money runs out, then, you know, what's important? You know, who loves you when you have nothing? Who loves you when you are nothing? And this kid thinks of his dad at that moment. And you know, that's probably the most perfect moment that God could set up, is when, you know, any living being realizes that the one who cares about them the most is God. What an awesome moment. I mean, to wake up, because, you know, people, they're fickle, man. They don't care. You know, one minute they're like, hey, you're the man. The next minute they're like, hey, we don't like you. And you're like, hey. But God is like, yeah, I always like you. It's all right. I'm always in your corner. And so really the point here that Jesus is driving at with this triple threat and with this last story in particular is that it's really not about the first son. Or I mean, it's not about actually the younger brother. This story, we've always focused on him. We've thought about, oh, isn't it wonderful how this kid goes and it just wrecks his life, and then there's forgiveness and love, but which is true, and there's beauty in that. But really what Jesus is driving at with the story is the older brother. And the point is, for the Pharisees, and sometimes too often for us, is that we're too much like the older brother. We love God, but we don't love what he loves. And the father goes out to his younger brother, or to the older brother, after he stalks off and he's angry because dad's throwing a party for the younger one. Dad goes out and says, hey, you know, your brother's back. You know, what's going on? He's like, I know you love me, but do you share my heart for your brother? And that's really the question that God's asking. That's what he's driving at with these religious rite that's having a trouble with all the other sinners at the party. What he's really getting at is saying, guys, don't you understand that you think you're walking with me? And maybe you are, but you don't share my heart for what's most important to me. This is what I live for. If you guys weren't here, I would be okay. But if all these sinners weren't hanging around, I would leave. Because you're doing all right, but they need me. And so we've got this older brother who's offended, who's angry, and who's stalked off and saying, Dad, you killed the fatted calf for this punk kid. How could you? Somebody laughed. I heard it. Dad, how could you? And so what we have is really this unbelievable offense where he's like, Dad, I've done everything right. And you've never, never once thrown a party for me. You've never once, you know, had my friends over and roasted a calf. This is unheard of. And he's totally sold you out. Basically said, Dad, I wish you were dead so I could have my inheritance. Instead of kicking off because it seems like you're in pretty good health, why don't you just hand it over now? That's essentially what he said and left home. And I've worked hard for you the whole time, and now you're throwing him a party. What's that? And you can see how he's kind of offended. But Dad comes out and says, and this is the perfect line. He says, Son, you don't understand. And so here's the moment where the older son gets an opportunity to come to his senses. And I wonder what his response is going to be. I wonder if he's going to be like his younger brother and really turn it around and realize, oh, I got to go home. Or I wonder if he's going to stay outside the party and really resist what God is doing. And I think the interesting thing here too is God's not without mercy. And this father, he says, Son, you don't understand. Everything I have is yours. That's a powerful statement. Brendan says that to me sometimes. Dad, is this mine? And this was before Judah. But I'd be like, buddy, everything I have is yours. You're not old enough to handle all of it yet. You know, he's like, cool, can I have that knife? I'm like, yeah, you're not really ready for that. I'll hold on to that for you. But buddy, everything I have belongs to you. And that's what this father says. He says, Son, you can have a party anytime you want. All of this is yours. But your son, my son, your brother, man, he's back. He's back. What are we going to do about that? So these stories really are a picture of God's heart for those who are undecided, unconvinced, maybe far from God. So Jesus really jumps into these three stories to say, hey, I want you to be like me. Don't expect people who don't share your faith to know the rules. They don't. People need our love. People need our time. There's a lot of work and attention that go into loving people. And Jesus is saying, I'm passionate about helping and befriending people who need me. And I'm passionate about helping you befriend people who need me. So the thought I leave you with today is this: really, mission is why we exist. We love God, but do we share his heart for the people that need him most? God, thanks today that you love the undecided and the unconvinced. God, I thank you even more that this is a place where they're welcome. God, people that are far from you are welcome here. And God, I pray that ever increasingly those people would be welcome in our homes, God, in our lives, irregardless of how they act and what they say and what they do. Lord, that you would get a hold of them. And God, you would use us to love on them and be close to them. God, you would watch over them and cause us to be the people that bring them into line with who you are and show them the kind of love that you are offering. God, more than anything, I pray that we would be able to reflect your heart for the people that are far from you. In Jesus' name, amen.